The Detroit News published a story in February about a man named Robert Stone. He'd been a student at the University of Michigan in the 1960s, and he told the News about abuse he'd experienced during medical exams with one of the school's most prominent physicians. Since then, hundreds of others have come forward with similar stories about Dr. Robert Anderson. U of M has tried to distinguish itself from some other big schools where serial sexual predators preyed on students, but some survivors say the university has failed to do things that would move toward accountability and justice. Writer Anna Clark has been looking into this for Michigan Radio, and she joins us now. Hi, Anna.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
We should mention that some of the abuse we're going to discuss will be disturbing. Anna, will you tell us a little bit more about Robert Stone, the man who was in the February article?
Sure. Well, he was in the early 1970s, he was a student at the University of Michigan studying English, theater, and speech. He came from a working class Detroit family. By the time he passed 10th grade, he had gone further in school than either of his parents, and he was getting through school working at a Uniroyal plant over the summers and washing dishes in the Mosher Jordan dorm during the year. But he loved being in Ann Arbor, especially at a time of profound social change. He was also trying to figure out his identity. I mean, he was attracted to both men and women, which was something that felt like was not an option at all at the time. He felt like he had to choose. He felt like being with men would be the best option for him. But of course, this was a time when being gay was literally a crime in the state of Michigan and also considered a mental illness by the psychiatric associations.
Yeah. So a friend recommended Dr. Anderson to him for an exam that he needed, and he went to see Anderson and was sexually abused during the exam in a way that he understood, right?
Right. It was really quite awful. I mean, he wasn't sure the best place to go to see a doctor. A friend recommended Anderson in particular as somebody who would treat gay students without reporting them, would be discreet. So we went to see Dr. Anderson at the University Health Service at U of M's campus, which Anderson was the director of. And when he went into the appointment, it didn't even take very long before Anderson was effectively coercing this young man into masturbating him.
Let's hear a little bit from Robert Stone himself right now.
I was white hot angry that anyone could do this to another human being, especially someone who took an oath of office to first do no harm.
Anna, one of the things that really comes across in the article you wrote is the way that Robert Anderson used the criminalized nature of homosexuality against many of the young men who came to see him. What did you find out about why Robert Stone didn't speak out about what happened?
Right. Well, Robert Stone was very clear that this was not appropriate behavior from a doctor, and he was so upset about it. He runs out of the room. He calls his friend. It gets the sense that this was something that the doctor always does. But he didn't report it because it didn't feel, first of all, that he would be believed at all, that gay students in particular were in a very precarious position. They didn't have the same expectations of safety or basic rights that others had. And so he didn't say anything at the time. It's decades later where he got to the point where he felt like it was time to share the story both with the university and then eventually publicly.
So this bombshell of a story lands in the Detroit News this past February, and that was the first time that we hear publicly of these allegations of abuse against Dr. Anderson, right?
Yes, that's the first time that it became widely known. But this is not the first time the university heard about it. While Robert Stone didn't report it, other students, among the many hundreds of people who have come forward to date that have been harmed by this doctor, several did do what they were supposed to do. They let their coaches know. They let they filed a written complaint. They, complained loudly to the secretary at the UHS. I mean, there were red flags along the way, but none of them taken seriously enough to remove this doctor from campus and from his access to students. the universe, it was about 2018 when one of those students who did send up red flags back in the 70s when he was abused, he wrote a letter to the university telling his whole story about what happened to him and the abuse he suffered at the hands of this doctor, not once, but many times at mandated exams to see him as a college athlete.
The name of that student athlete was Tad DeLuca, and he had his reasons for being reticent to come forward. Let's hear a little bit from an interview with DeLuca's attorney, Parker Steinar.
When you're competing against three other teammates for the same spot or the same scholarship, do you want to be the one that rocks the boat? And sadly, these abusers know that and they take advantage of it.
The university quietly began an internal investigation with the campus police to find out more about what was going on. That investigation was turned over to the Washtenaw County Prosecutor's Office, which eventually closed it because Dr. Anderson has been dead for 12 years. And even the few remaining people who directly enabled him are apparently not susceptible to any charges because of various statutes of limitations. And that was kind of it until Robert Stone shared his story with a Detroit news reporter, and suddenly everything kind of breaks open. Then that's when the university apologizes. That's when the university starts setting up a hotline for survivors to call for free and confidential counseling. Things, it starts making moves like that.
Anna, you have to wonder how many more students were abused over Robert Anderson's four decades in practice because nobody listened.
Yeah, this is, to a certain extent, we'll probably never know the exact answer. I mean, he was there from the 60s till 2003, and even beyond that, he apparently was still seeing some people. And there are accusations that cross all those decades that all follow the same pattern. While hundreds have come forward in some form now, either publicly sharing their story or anonymously in lawsuits, I heard at least one person say that, like, the number of people who may have been harmed by him could be in the thousands. It was a really systematic predator who had consistent access to not only students and athletes at the University of Michigan, but also pilots, community members, including pilots who were sent to Dr. Anderson for their required physicals from to maintain their pilot's license, and there was people who would seek out Dr. Anderson during the Vietnam era because he was known for doing evaluations that would keep them out of the war. And there was people who saw him for life insurance evaluations. And on top of all the students he had consistent access to, especially once he started working full time with the athletic department, where partly because of his policy changes and his policy influence, athletes were required to see him for annual physicals as in addition to all the other medical care that they were receiving through them. So it was a bit of a machine.
We should take a moment here to note that the University of Michigan is the holder of Michigan Radio's license. Anna Clark, Robert Anderson has been dead a dozen years now, and it turns out a lot of his enablers are gone too. What would you say justice looks like for these survivors today?
That is a question that is still haunts me, honestly. I mean, this is a case where it's not so much about is he or isn't he guilty. The university doesn't even deny it. In fact, the chair of the Board of Regents has acknowledged that he too was abused by this doctor. But now, unlike a case like Larry Nassar at Michigan State, we're not talking about how many years in prison should this guy spend. We're talking about how this happened at the university and what its institutional responsibility is across time. And a lot of what justice looks like is how the university responds right now with being transparent with survivors and making sure that the choices it's making have put them first rather than the institution's reputation and all that. If it doesn't want to make the same mistakes that a lot of other colleges have. So the university has signaled that it wants to do things a different way. It doesn't want to be as combative, et cetera. Survivors and advocates do have critiques about how this has gone so far. So one of the big ones is that early on, the university hired a law firm to defend itself in, among these coming lawsuits that was well known for having represented Jeffrey Epstein and Roman Polanski, people who are well known to be sexual abusers. It dismissed that after that became public and hired someone else. It is it hired a law firm to do an internal investigation about Dr. Anderson on top of the one it did quietly in 2018. That has come up for critique among a lot of survivors and advocates who say that the alternative way to do this would have been to turn things over to the Attorney General's office, have a public entity investigate what happened. Now, the university says this law firm will do a very good job and it'll release the report the same day it receives it. But anyway, the point is that there is a number of ways where survivors and advocates have said that while the university is using a lot of the language of restorative justice and wanting to do things in a different way, the actions feel more combative than they need to be when these are people who, through no fault of their own, were harmed by an institution that should have stopped this doctor's behavior a long time ago.
Investigative journalist Anna Clark. She has written a complete story about Dr. Robert Anderson that you can read right now at michiganradio.org. Anna, thank you for your work on this, and thanks for talking to us about it.
Thank you very much.